Samaveda Bhakta Brinda ki jai. Harinam Sankirtana ki jai. Brihat Madanga ki jai. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Sri Guru Garanga. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, 2nd Canto, 5th Chapter, Text 20. Okay. Sa esha bhagavalingas. Sa esha bhagavalingas. Tiribir etar adhoksajaha. Tribir etar adhoksajaha. Swalakshita gatir brahman. Swalakshita gatir brahman. Sarvesham mama chesvaraha. Sarvesham mama chesvaraha. Sa esha bhagavalingas. Tiribir etar adhoksaja. Swalakshita gatir brahman. Sarvesham mama chesvara. Others. Sa, he, Esha, this, Bhagavan, the personality of Godhead, Lingai, by the symptoms, Tribi, by the three, Etai, by all these, Adhoksaja, the superseer transcendence, Su Alakshita, veritably unseen. Gati, movement. Brahman, O Narada. Sarvesham, of everyone. Mama, mine. Cha, as also. Ishvaraha, the controller. Translation and put forth by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada. O Brahman and Narada, the superseer, the transcendent Lord, is beyond the perception of the material senses of the living entities because of the above-mentioned three modes of nature. But He is the controller of everyone, including me. So this, of course, is Lord Brahma speaking. Purport. In the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 7, text 24 and 25, the Lord has declared very clearly that the impersonalist who gives more importance to the transcendental rays of the Lord as Brahma Jyoti, and who concludes that the absolute truth is ultimately impersonal and only manifests a form at a time of necessity, is less intelligent than the personalist, however much the impersonalist may be engaged in the study of Vedanta. The fact is that such impersonalists are covered by the above-mentioned three modes of material nature. Therefore, they are unable to approach the transcendental personality of Godhead. The Lord is not approachable by everyone because he is curtained by his yogamaya potency. But one should not wrongly conclude that the Lord was formerly unmanifested, but one should not wrongly conclude that the Lord was formerly unmanifested and has now manifested himself in the human form. This misconception of the formlessness of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is due to the yogamaya curtain of the Lord and can be removed only by the Supreme Will. As soon as the conditioned soul surrenders unto him, the devotees of the Lord who are transcendental to the above-mentioned three modes of material nature can see the all-blissful transcendental form of the Lord with their vision of love and the attitude of pure devotional service. Om Ganati Madanda Shajananjana Shalakaya Chakshurna Militamiena Tasma Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Gadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Parakamalam Shri Gurum Vaishnavam Shah Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raganatam Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savarutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakam Becomes Cha Hey Krishna Karana Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagapate Gopisha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostate Tapta Kanchana Gorange Radha Vrindavaneshwari Vishabhanu Sate Devi Pranamami Hare Pure Vancha Kalpatirubhyas Cha Kripa Sindhu Vyavaja Patitanam Pavanevyo Vaishnavebhyo Namonoha Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Pavuna Chananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasari Govada Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama Rama Rama, Rama Hare Hare. Okay. So Prabhupada says here in the purport that the impersonalists, they give more importance to the transcendental rays of the Lord as Brahma Jyoti, and they conclude that the absolute truth is ultimately impersonal and only manifests a form at a time of necessity. So that's not so bad. That's not so bad. In other words, if they're acknowledging that, okay, ultimately the absolute truth is impersonal, and he manifests a form at a time of necessity. Because if that's really where they were at, you know, is that actually what they were really believing, you know, the core of their... Then we could say to them, okay, well, look, you're saying that the absolute truth is ultimately impersonal, and he's manifesting a form at a time of necessity. So that form that he's manifesting, that's him, right? You're saying it's the absolute truth. So what does the absolute truth say when he manifests that form at a time of necessity? See, logically, you could corner him. He says, Aham sarvasya prabhavo matak sarvam pavartate iti matva vajantimam buddha bhava samanvita. I am the source of all spiritual and material worlds. Everything emanates from me. The wise who know this perfectly engage in my devotional service and worship me with all their hearts. And so many other statements like that, you see. So in other words, it's more than that. It's more than just that. It's a form of covert atheism. Impersonalism they study the Vedic literatures like anything. They might, you know, they know certain parts of it inside and out. But ultimately, at least most of them, it's a form of covert atheism. Because when it comes to the crunch, as far as they're concerned, that form that's manifesting is not the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Real impersonalists, the real impersonalists, or the pure-hearted impersonalists like the Four Kumaras, Sukadeva Goswami, Dilva Mangala Thakur, people like that, when they were confronted with Krishna and the philosophy of devotional service, they surrender. You know, they become personless. See? But these, the ones that Prabhupada's speaking about here, these impersonalists, when they're very good at, it's like, what's the example? Prabhupada would give the example, smoking marijuana in somebody else's hand. They really, it's atheism, but they don't want to be called out on that. You're atheists. They use the Vedic literatures to cover the whole thing. And you know, Krishna calls a spade in the ninth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. He says, Avajananti mamudha manushim tanamashrita padambhava majanato mamabhuta maheshwaram, that these fools deride me when I descend in the human form. They don't know who I really am. They don't know my higher nature, which is changeless and supreme. In other words, they're not actually acknowledging that when Krishna comes, that he's a manifestation of the impersonal Brahman. Because, as I said, if they really were acknowledging that, okay, Krishna is something other than an ordinary human being, then what do they make of all the things that Krishna is saying? And Krishna's making all these claims. But they don't accept that. You know, they have their approach to the... it's a dishonest approach to the Vedic literatures, really. Another example that Prabhupada would give is that their approach is something like the man who has a chicken and he likes the eggs. He likes the eggs that the chicken is producing, but he doesn't like the head because the head you got to feed, you see, and that's costing him money. But he likes the back part of the chicken where the eggs come from. So he decides, let's just cut off the head of the chicken. And that way we don't have to feed it, and we'll just get the eggs. See, but the obvious, it's called Ardha Kukuti Nyaya, the half-hen logic. But the obvious thing is if you cut off the head of the chicken, then you're not going to get the eggs. So same way, if you cut off the part of the philosophy that's where Krishna is saying this, he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then you killed the whole thing. So just like if you cut off the head of the chicken, you kill the whole chicken. If you pick and choose within the Vedic literatures, then you're killing the whole thing. So that's what they've really succeeded in doing. They're very much, they're very, it's a philosophy of convenience. You know, they very much like it when Krishna says something or the Vedic literatures say something like, one should see me everywhere. They love that. That's right up their alley. You know, Krishna's saying, one should see me everywhere. Okay, because that's, you know, God's everywhere kind of thing. They like that. But when Krishna says something like, give up everything and surrender unto me, no. That they reject. See, they'll accept the stuff that works for them, and they reject what doesn't. So this is, as I said, it's very dishonest. It's like a covert atheism. And Prabhupada would call them out on that. Prabhupada would say, you know, since they're even, and it gets to this point. Prabhupada would say they're big sannyasis. This is quoting Prabhupada. Big sannyasis. And what they're telling people is, don't care for all this. And there's all the injunctions in the Vedic literatures. He said, they preach to people, you can do whatever you like. You yourself are God. There is no such thing as Papa or Punya. And even if there is, because you're God, you're immune to that. See? So that's how they preach. So these are the impersonalists that, you know, that we're not happy about. And not the, as I said, not the four Kumaras, the Sukadeva Goswamis, and the Bilva Mangala Thakur, when they come in contact with bhakti or the philosophy, philosophy of devotional service, they accept it, they surrender. No, these are actually covert atheists. They're using the Vedic literature to push their own agenda, and their agenda is basically atheism. You know, underlying attitudes there are that really they're here, as far as they're concerned, you know, they have this word kalpana, which means all the statements in the Vedic literatures are imaginary, mythology. Kalpana means mythology, and that's their idea, that it's all mythology. You know, Krishna's statements and the things, the statements about Krishna's pastimes in particular, that's all mythology. You could just dismiss that. But Prabhupada's arguments against that went like this. There was many, several. I'll try to mention some of the more important ones that I found. One is that Prabhupada would say, why mythology? What business would Vyasadeva and all these great acharyas, and he would, Prabhupada in different places, and you know, because he presented this argument more than once. I went through the Veda base, and there was like, you know, a few dozen where Prabhupada would present this exact argument. And then he would mention, like, Viragava Acharya, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, Ramanujacharya, Sanatan Goswami, etc. So, you know, he rattled off all the names. Even Lord Chaitanya himself, they didn't say it was mythology. You know, that's another point. What business would these great, great personalities have producing mythology? They themselves didn't say it's mythology. Quite the contrary, their presentation is it should be accepted as axiomatic truth. Axiomatic truth means self-evident. Just like in the, I think it's the Declaration of Independence, they say we hold these truths to be. They could have said axiomatic truths, but they would. They said it had a better ring, self-evident. You see, so it's self-evident, and that's how the Vedic literatures are supposed to be accepted as axiomatic truths. So that was one argument that Prabhupada would present. Another one is, why are you restricting, you know, this is like a logical argument. We're saying Krishna is God, and you're saying that Krishna can't do those things. So the Prabhupada would say, why are you restricting God? Is God under your control, or are you under God's control? And it's a rhetorical question, obviously. You know, we're under God's control. If you're accepting God, why can't he do those things? Why can't he lift Govardhan Hill? Why can't he expand himself into 16,000 forms and have, et cetera, 16,000 wives like that? You're saying it's impossible. Why? You know, are you under God's control or is God under your control? See? So that was another argument Prabhupada put forward. And another point he made was that, you know, because sometimes they question, what is the relevance of these, you know, pastimes like Krishna appearing as a little child with Devaki, or being the son of Mother Yasoda and he's being controlled by his mother, you know, being tied to a wooden grinding mortar. What is that? And Prabhupada's response to that was that Krishna likes it. You know, Krishna likes it. Krishna doesn't always, he gets tired of the awe and reverence. Awe and reverence is good. You know, worshiping Krishna in awe and reverence is good. But sometimes Krishna wants a little bit more taste, you know. And he likes it when he's controlled by his devotees. Just to give like an example, to just say like, we have Amala Bhakti Maharaj here. He's resting at the moment, but he's here. And so he's a sannyasi. So whenever I see Amala Bhakti Maharaj the first time every day, I always pay obeisances because that's the Vedic injunction, right? So I do that. So awe and reverence. But sometimes, you know, when we go for lunch prasadam, and I'm on the line there, and I'm one of the last people, and I ask for chapatis, and I say, Maharaj, could I have like 3 chapatis? And he kind of looks, and sometimes I'll say something like, come on, Maharaj, quit holding back on the chapatis. You got about 24 from there. There's only a couple people. So that's really kind of inappropriate in one sense, but it's, you know, it's the rasa, you see? And he appreciates it. He doesn't mind it, I don't think. But, you know, that's the idea. Sometimes you kind of like, you go beyond the awe and reverence. You have to go beyond the awe and reverence. So Krishna likes that. Krishna likes it when you go, when a devotee, not just anybody, but when a confidential devotee goes beyond the awe and reverence to get a little bit more intimate like that, and Krishna, and that's what those rasas are all about, you see? So that's an argument Prabhupada would give against that point. And another one he would say, he said, you know, so your accusation is you're accusing, we just have, it's mythology. But Prabhupada would say, what do you have? You're just imaginology. You know, you're saying ours is mythology? So Prabhupada would say, you just have imaginology. In other words, each generation comes up with a whole new thing, a whole new spin outside, you know, outside our tradition. It's a whole new spin, each new generation. With each philosopher that comes along, you got a whole new bunch of ideas. He said, and Prabhupada was making the point, but he said, at least we have these books, which I took to mean, at least we have this parampara, which means we've got the same ideas coming down for thousands of years. You know, Prabhupada didn't give us anything different than Bhaktisiddhanta, who didn't give us anything different from Bhaktivinoda, didn't give us anything different from the 6 Goswamis. Back, right? So that's the point I think he's trying to make, that, okay, you're saying mythology, but at least our mythology is the same. We're consistent for thousands of years. We're saying the same stuff. We're not coming up with a new spin, a new version with every new philosopher that comes along or every new theologist that comes along. So that's a point. That's a significant point. And so Prabhupada, make the point that we have this parampara, we should follow the Mahajans. And then on one lecture, Prabhupada said, not in frustration, but I don't know what mood he said, but he made the point, so ultimately he said, what can Krishna do? It was a follow-up on Prabhupada was saying, Krishna comes and he performs these pastimes, he expands his 16,000 forms and marries 16,000 wives, and then they just say mythology. And Prabhupada went, so what can Krishna do? And he said, what can I do? What can Krishna do? In other words, ultimately, the living entity has free will. The living entity has free will, and it's up to the living entity whether they want to accept these things, at least provisionally, give it the benefit of the doubt, and give it some serious study, try the process of devotional service, or just reject it altogether, which is unfortunately what most people are doing today. They just reject it altogether. But this is the age for that. Krishna makes this arrangement that Kali Yuga is the age. It's to give the opportunity for souls who want to act completely, or not 100%, but to a very significant degree of independently rejecting any kind of Vedic authority. Here's your chance. This is the age to do it in, you see? And it's nothing new. It's nothing new. It's been going on for thousands of years. Actually, if you read, we just went over it recently in the Bhagavatam here. If you read carefully, it's going on for a long time now. In the famous verse by Sukadeva Goswami, where he goes, Kirata Hunanda Pulinda Pulkasha. In that verse, in the purport, Prabhupada says, I caught something. I was rereading it the other day for some reason, and I caught something which maybe he caught before, but maybe he didn't, that the Pulindas, who are the Greeks, the Abiras, who are the Arabs, and the Yavanas, who are the Turks. Prabhupada made the same comment in his description of them, and all three races. He said here, referring to the Pulindas, he says, but later on, due to giving up their Brahminical culture, they were mentioned as Malechas, just as those who are not following. And then about the Abiras, he goes here, these Abiras were formerly Kshatriyas within the Brahminical culture, but they gave up their connection. And then and the Yavanas, he says, the Yavanas were therefore Kshatriyas, and later on, by giving up the Brahminical culture, they became Kshatriyas. So in other words, originally there was one world culture. Actually, I'm going to read an interesting statement here from this book by Sariputta called Veda Cosmography and Astronomy. It says here, the presence of Vedic cosmological themes in many separated cultures throughout the world does provide evidence for the existence of a single culture, the Vedic culture, in the remote past that widely disseminated these themes. See, in other words, if you look back, sometimes I wonder, how do we get in this mess anyway? How did it get this bad if there was 5,000 years, as recently as 5,000 years ago, a Vedic emperor, Maharaj Yudhisthira? How did it degenerate to the point where it is today? Well, Shringi, it's right. I think Prabhupada explains, we already read it in earlier chapters of the Bhagavatam. It started off with the degradation of the Brahmins, and Shringi was the first of the. And then so the Brahmins get degraded. When the Brahmins get degraded, the Kshatriyas think, hey, what the heck, man? We don't have to follow these guys. They're off, They're in it for themselves, so we're not following. So then the Brahmins go off. The Kshatriyas go off. The Brahmins go off first. It filters down. Then the Kshatriyas go off, and I just gave three examples of that. These the Pulindas, the Abiras, and the Yavanas, Prabhupada specifically saying that they were Kshatriyas, and they rejected their connection with Brahminical culture. They rejected. So then they you get Malecha culture, Yavana culture, and whatever else, Abira culture. So that's how it degrades like that. But I mean, originally, it started off as Vedic culture. So we have to be, I guess, one lesson there for us is that keep the culture. We got to really hang on to what Prabhupada has given us, because when we let go of the culture, then as what happened to these Pulundas, the Abiras, and they become, you know, something other than Kshatriyas. They become Yavanas, Malechas, and Chandalas. You know, Kshatriyas that let go of the Brahminical culture wind up Chandalas, Malechas, and Yavanas. So in the same way, the, you know, members of ISKCON, followers of Prabhupada, who give up the basic practices of devotional service, the regulative principles and the basic practices of devotional service, are going to wind up something not that we don't want to wind up. The same thing will happen. That's how it works, see? So we've got to be careful about that. How am I doing for time there? Got five. Okay, so I'll just read one last thing that's interesting, and then I'll open it up for comments and questions. So this is... I'll read one other comment Sariputta made, which basically echoes what Prabhupada said. I think it's very... He picked up on it, and he mentioned in his book. He says here, he's, in reference to one specific passage from the Krishna book, where it talks about how this King Nagnajit had a daughter, and when she got married, he gave 90 million horses in charity and 100 times more slaves than horses. So his comment about that, which is, you know, pretty incredible, right? I mean, how do you give away 90 million horses? And then if that ain't bad enough, how do you give away 100 times more slaves than horses? So now, here's his comment. He says, modern scholars use statements like this as an excuse to reject Vedic literature as Hindu mythology. Right? And there are many such statements that are just inconceivable. How could, you know, I mean, how, really, if you stop, how does somebody lift a hill? How do you even begin to lift a hill? Or it's inconceivable. But here's his, and this is echoing what one of Prabhupada's main arguments on this point. He says here, modern scholars reject this as mythology, Hindu mythology, or utterly irresponsible fantasy. Okay, boom, that's their accusation. And he says, however, as we have already suggested, and as Prabhupada stated many times in his lectures and his purports, their interpretation is contradicted by the abundant evidence indicating that the Vedic literature's gravity and seriousness of purpose. See, by the Vedic literature's gravity and seriousness of purpose. So he's saying the same thing I was trying to just say, but much more eloquently. So that's the point. You see, so in other words, it doesn't make any sense. Here you have literature which is presenting such a serious philosophy and in such an incredibly intelligent way. You know, Prabhupada would make comments like that, that, you know, the passages in the Srimad Bhagavatam, they're, you know, really, it's very brilliantly written and poetic and deep philosophical points, and that's going to be just all for the purpose of presenting some no, it doesn't make any sense. So there's that point. And here's something interesting that I just dug out of here that I thought everybody would find interesting. This is relating to this point of how there was one single culture in the remote past that widely disseminated Vedic knowledge. And this is from, I'll read it. And he says, this may seem a bit far-fetched, but to link the traditions of North American Indians with Vedic civilization. But even here we find some suggestive connections. For example, here is the example. The Sioux Indians tell of a cycle of four ages. The Sioux Indians, you know, the Sioux, like the Cherokee, Comanches, they were just one tribe, the Sioux, okay? So they tell of a cycle of four ages. There is a buffalo that loses one leg during each age. At the present, we are in the last age, according to the Sioux Indians, an age of degradation. Hey, is this sounding familiar? Does this, you ever hear anything? And the buffalo has one leg. In the Bhagavatam, of course, the same story... He lets the cat out of the bag here. In the Bhagavatam, of course, the same story is told about the bull Dharma at present. And we are in the last age, the age of Kali, and Dharma is standing on one leg. I found that really fascinating, you know, that the Native American Indians, the Sioux Indians, had that same pastime right there. So anyway, so basically that's kind of all I had to say. So I'll stop there. Does anybody have any comment or question? Prem Sankirtan. We're waiting for a mic. Okay, you want to use this mic here? Okay, I can repeat the question. Go ahead. They follow the Vedic scriptures, yes, supposedly.
And personally, they're bona fide according to what Prabhupada said. There are still not perfect, and there are basically envious. And it's amazing, they cannot admit that they are envious to Krishna. They're basically on, you can say, of anartha nivritti.
Well, here's the point. I'm going to cut you off, okay? The litmus test is this.
Huh?
The litmus test. You know what a litmus test is? It's when you're doing chemistry and you're trying to figure out the pH of something. Anyway, it's a test that reveals the true colors of something, okay? So when they come in contact with, you know, the Krishna conscious devotional service philosophy, those who are the actual impersonalists who aren't, as you are saying, and I was envious, they will be attracted. They'll accept that. They'll go, okay, good. That's nice. You know, there's nothing wrong with giving importance to the transcendental rays of the Lord of the Brahma Jyoti, but when they're confronted with the devotional service philosophy and they reject that as being kalpana or imaginary, then we can understand their true colors. Just like Prabhupada gives that example of it was a jackal who fell into a vat of blue dye. And he came out of the vat of blue dye and he was blue. So he kind of fit, well, you know, maybe I could make use of this. So he went into the jungle and all the animals, when they saw him, they were going, oh, who are you? He goes, I am sent from God. And they all believed him. You know, they were all thinking, because they never saw an animal like that before. They just thought, well, he must be sent from God. And then one night, they were all worshiping him and everything. And then off in the distance, there was the cry of the other jackals. You know, and the jackals, it's their nature. They can't restrain themselves. When they hear the mating call, you know, they have to respond to it. So he heard the jackals cry, and he cried back. And then they could understand, oh, it's just a jackal. So it's like that. And as these impersonalists, okay, yeah, it's good. You're following the Vedic literatures. You're giving importance to the Brahma Jyoti like that. But when you get, you know, the philosophy of devotional service, and you don't do like what the four Kumaras and Sukadeva Goswami and Bilva Mangala Thakur did, which is surrender to Krishna, and you just hold stubbornly to your understanding that, no, you know, Krishna is just an ordinary human being, then we can understand from that you are a covered atheist and you're actually, you know, not somebody who wants to understand the absolute truth, but just use that philosophy as a convenient way to push your own agenda, which is just to do whatever you want. Yeah.
But still, you know, we can say Mayavadi, they're envious, you know, they purposely reject Krishna, but still out of ignorance, you know, for Kumaras, they don't know, they turn into devotee, but philosophically still, without Krishna, if you're not devotee of Krishna, still envy is in our hearts. They're maybe not aware, but you cannot surrender to Krishna.
So what's your point?
If you don't give up this envy, so this envy, what is also person, is explained Srimad Bhagavatam, so it still has to be in their heart, even they don't know, you know, they want to know absolute truth. But I think still this envy has to be in their heart also, impersonalist.
Okay, so the point is the same. My point is the same. Envy or no envy. When they come, if somebody starts off as an impersonalist, you know, kind of dealing with, but if when they come in contact with Krishna consciousness, they accept it, that's fine, problem solved. And if they don't, then we can understand that, yeah, it's you know, your attraction and your interest and everything in Vedic literature is flawed. It's got some problem there, because if you really were like pure in heart, then you would do like following the footsteps of Four Kumaras, Sukadeva Goswami, Bhava Mangala Thakur, and give up that the impersonal understanding and accept the personal understanding. Okay, so we'll stop there. Gunjara Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.
See the book for a second?
Yeah, sure.
This is, yes, sir. stay is, what's his name? Springer. All right, well, I'll walk right over there.
Hi, Walt, what's the devotee's name?
Sadhu Pita.
Sadhu, right, okay. Yeah. Thank you so much, Margaret.